This is the Breaker.News podcast for June 24th, 2018. Welcome. I'm Bob Mackin, publisher of the Breaker.News and host of the Breaker.News podcast. The Breaker is your source for news, opinion, and analysis about British Columbia issues, institutions, and influencers. Later, I'll tell you how you can support the Breaker. On this edition, regular features like the Is It Just Me commentary, Around the Rim, headlines about the Pacific Rim, Cascadia Calling, headlines about the Pacific Northwest, The Big Deal feature, more than 1,000 words with the North Vancouver man who took some of the greatest pictures of the 20th century in Vancouver. I sit down with award-winning Ralph Bauer at his North Vancouver City Hall photo exhibit. And I'll award a virtual Nanaimo bar to people who made a difference. Now, is it just me? Is it just me, or is silly season in full swing? This is what happened in British Columbia just last week. First, a pantsless yob from Surrey invaded the BC Place field and was decked by a BC Lion during the team's home opener. It was the most seen highlight of opening weekend of the Canadian Football League season. The yob with no pants hired a lawyer who says the yob suffered a concussion. But certainly BC Place has got to do a better job of securing the field. The players should be left alone to focus on the pigskin, not the pig-headed. Ex-Harper Conservative MP Y. Young from South Vancouver unveiled her run for mayor of Vancouver on the first day of summer, complete with a violinist playing a cover of Katy Perry's Roar. And Y. Young also unleashed a series of tweets riddled with misspellings. She's anti-bike lane and she wants to keep the viaducts, which will please some. But how will she make up the hole in the budget to fulfill a promise to end Sunday parking meters? That would be around $13 million a year if she became mayor and if she fulfilled the promise. If. And then there was 25-year-old Christina Schell, a waitress at the Osoyoos Golf Club's 19th hole. She has filed a human rights complaint after her boss ordered her to wear a bra on the job. She says she goes braless for health reasons. And in Richmond, the RCMP there say that they found more than a dozen pianos in a South Richmond warehouse, and they're hoping to reunite the pianos with their owners. Yes, summer just began, but silly season is in full swing. What do you think? Email me, Bob at thebreaker.news. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Around the Rim. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Rim. In the South China Morning Post, Jun Mai reports, Chinese holiday island to unlock Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube for foreign visitors. Visitors to China's tropical island of Hainan will have access to popular social media platforms like Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube that are banned elsewhere in China as part of a new plan drawn up by local authorities to boost tourism. The provincial government said also that it expects to hire 50,000 English-speaking foreign workers, many from the Philippines and other Southeast Asian countries, and to buy 2,000 minutes of advertising time a year on international networks, including the BBC, CNN, and CNBC, according to a lengthy 3-year action plan published online and reported by state media. The proposals come 2 months after Chinese President Xi Jinping announced his plans to transform the island province, known for its palm-fringed beaches and dubbed by some as China's Hawaii, into a free trade port by 2020. In the Japan Times, Kataro Komiya reports, Covert Cabs, Yokohama Taxi Company employs ninja drivers to chauffeur customers. As visitors from overseas flock to Japan, companies in the tourism industry are finding creative ways to tap a classic stealthy image of the country. Sanwa Kutsu Group, a Yokohama-based taxi provider, joined the trend last week, launching Ninja de Taxi. Customers using the service are picked up by a taxi driver clad in a ninja costume, who will take passengers to their destination while staying in character and making ninja moves such as quick steps and finger signs. The operator aims to improve its brand image while offering a unique taxi experience. The firm said it has 3 ninja drivers on staff. And in the New Zealand Herald, Phil Taylor reports, Behind bars with Arthur Taylor, one of New Zealand's longest-serving prisoners. Arthur Taylor has won courtroom battles and a woman's heart from behind bars, but he can't convince authorities he is safe to release. Surprisingly, during the later part of 40 years in jail, Arthur Taylor has found a whole lot of love. Taylor, who turns 62 this year, has developed a passion for the law and fallen head over heels for a much younger Canadian woman, law student Tui Hartman of British Columbia. Love blossomed on social media, she moved to New Zealand, and they got engaged early this year. Any sort of normal relationship for the couple must wait until Taylor is released, which at the earliest will be late next year, and at the latest when his sentence runs its course in 2022. He has convictions across a wide spectrum for aggravated robbery, burglary, receiving, drug offenses, and escaping. That's Around the Rim on this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. Now it's time on the Breaker.News podcast for Cascadia Calling. We look at news headlines around the Pacific Northwest. In the Skagit Valley Herald, Kimberly Covell reports, "There's no shelter in place when these Whatcom and Skagit sleeping giants awake." It is difficult to predict when a volcano such as Mount Baker or Glacier Peak in Washington will erupt, how it will erupt, spreading lava, spewing ash, blowing mountaintops, and how long the effects will last are even harder to calculate. While experts said Friday during a talk in Concrete that communities near those volcanoes shouldn't despair, residents should be aware of the sleeping giants in their backyard and have a plan in case they wake. Mount Baker's largest eruption was about 7,000 years ago. For Glacier Peak, it was 13,000 years ago. In Nanaimo News Now, Dominic Abassi reports, Nanaimo files for injunction to shut down Discontent City. On June 19th, the city officially filed a petition in BC Supreme Court asking for an order to remove the Tent City and its occupants. The camp, on city-owned land at One Port Drive across from Port Place Shopping Center, was erected on May 17th. It has since grown to well over 100 residents. Nanaimo Council vowed to remove the camp with help from the courts, while organizers said they eagerly anticipated presenting their case in front of a judge. The BC Court of Appeal previously ruled that when there's a lack of shelter spaces or affordable and supportive housing, homeless are allowed to maintain tent camps under their charter rights, said the lawyer for the Tent City dwellers. In the Olympian, Abby Spigman reports, Olympia's sales tax will go up July 1st to fund affordable housing. Shoppers in Olympia, the capital of Washington, will see a higher sales tax rate starting July 1st after voters approved an increase to fund affordable housing. The 0.1% increase brings Olympia's sales tax rate to 8.9%, the same rate as in Lacey and Tumwater. Olympia voters in February passed the Home Fund measure to raise more than $2 million a year for affordable housing and related services. The city hopes to build or renovate nearly 350 units in the next decade with the help of public and private partners and about $4.5 million a year in matching funds. That's Cascadia Calling for this edition of the Breaker.News podcast. This is the Big Deal feature on the Breaker.News podcast. 4 decades and 4,000 photos later, photographer Ralph Bauer retired from the Vancouver Sun more than 20 years ago. Bauer had shot the Queen, the Pope, Muhammad Ali, Elvis, the Beatles, Mick Jagger, Terry Fox, even a water-skiing squirrel. He also shot some of the biggest crime, unrest, and disaster photos of 20th century Vancouver. On June 17, 1958, Bauer was at the Hastings racetrack when disaster unfolded nearby. The Second Narrows Bridge had collapsed, taking the lives of 18 workers. Bauer won a National Newspaper Award for his 1985 photo of a hostage taking in progress. The 84-year-old is a lifelong North Vancouverite, and some of his best photographs are on display now in the North Vancouver City Hall lobby until July 3rd. There's even a photo of Bauer's North Van schoolmate, the late great sprinter Harry Drome. He was once the fastest man in the world. I interviewed Bauer about his career and about photography at North Van City Hall. What can people see when they come here?
Well, you mentioned the first most important word, people. because over my years when I've taken photos, every photograph that appeared in the sun had a person or many persons behind it. So to talk people is very important. But when I worked as a newspaper photographer, I always thought of three things: people, animals, and scenes. Those were my things I went after for photographs over my 41 years at the Sun. Now, I've started in the 55 era, more closer to 56, and up to 96. And in those years, I just happened to be so lucky to be everywhere at the right place at the right time for my coverage of photographs. And most of them, which I covered, the Sun used in the paper. And I was just so fortunate to be there, the right place at the right time, with movie stars, with little zookeepers, with little people that won an award, big people and little people, but important people.
Who was your favorite person to photograph? Which person?
Well, I couldn't say favorite, but the person I photographed more than anybody else was Pierre Trudeau. And because he was such a famous person, and he was actually a photograph operator. Yeah, I came to photograph him once, and he just did a perfect jackknife from a diving board, and I was grumbling, and he heard me, and before I could say boo, he was up there and did it again. That he was a performer and one of the guys that I photographed, I would say, than any other person.
Which photograph was the pièce de résistance in your career?
Well, naturally, every photographer, when he wins an award for the top award, like for Canada, and he's lucky to get it, it's got to be, I guess, one of your favorite pictures. But it had a favorite ending, but it didn't have a favorite beginning. It was a shot of a distraught father four floors up holding his son out in diapers for ransom. And I got in the position where I was about to shoot him and with photos and my long lens, and he spotted me and put the knife to the youngster's throat and told the police department and security, get that guy out of there. So I started to flee, and I happened to jump into a former newsman's van who waved me in, and I got in there, and we opened the door a little bit. I got my perfect shot of him holding the youngster out the window, which I wasn't proud to get, but I got it. And as it turned out, the police barged in and rescued the boy, and it was a good ending. But to think that that has to be my best picture, because I won all kinds of things for it. Top picture in Canada. Once one person said top news picture in 50 years. So what I mean, it's not a bragging thing, but it's a thing that happened, and I guess it has to be my favorite photo.
You were a photographer that started off in the day and age when newspapers were fearing the competition from television. Now we're in a different day and age where newspapers are having to adapt because of the internet. What do you think of how the medium has evolved over the years?
Well, in photographic operations of cameras and things, I could talk to you for about 2 hours about all the improvements. But I'm actually one of the fellows at the right time in the right place. Started with the big 4x5 speed graphic where you got six shots to a capsule and then you had to change it where you get 35 to a little roll of film that you can flip in. And I worked all the way up to the digital camera for 2 years. So in other words, I worked from 95 to the big old buxom camera and the big strobe and things like that, right up to the digital 35mm camera. So over that time, the things that increased year by year, but the biggest thing that came along was software in the 90s. And in the 90s, you had Photoshop, and they invented something mid-90s called a film scanner. And a film scanner could film any negative in a matter of minutes, and that was the biggest achievement in my life for bringing my memories back, because I could go to get a negative that was as good when it was taken in 1957 and put it into that scanner, and I'd get a perfect photograph. Now that's progress. Now when I was in the 80s, you couldn't do that. I never heard of a scanner, and neither did all these great photographers that worked with me over those years with all that increase in progress. From a great, big, cumbersome camera to a little 35 and have a built-in flash, everything. It was like night and day. And then, like I say, software, Photoshop, and a scanner, it just was a complete turn in history of photography for a newspaper movie.
Why did you choose photography as a profession and also a passion? What caught you about photography?
Well, once again, I'm coming back to that word, people. I went through high school and took journalism in junior high and high school. And in high school, I got to be the guy to take the little click with a regular Brownie Hawkeye or something. And I did it, and I was just like a general person with a camera. I was nothing special. And so as I ended up in my school year, I went back for half a year because I was being hired by the local tugboat company to shoot, to be a bookkeeper for their tugboat company. Well, as it turned out, I said, well, I'm going there in the fall. For the fun of it, I'll go with my two colleagues of journalism to the Sun, which was Arv Olson and another chap. And I never left. I was there about 4 weeks as a copy boy, and they said, we've just fired a man, young fella upstairs. One of you's got to go up there. And not me, not me, and not me. So the guy says to me, you go for 2 weeks and try it. If you don't like it, the next guy goes. I got up there and two days, I never would want to leave. People came around, ex-pro photographers, and they taught me how to do things as I went along. But my job at about a year later was operating what they call a wire photo machine. And this wire photo would bring in all the photos from the world for the newspaper. And here I was bringing them in on my little machine in a darkroom, and they were ending up in the Vancouver Sun. And I was the producer of the final product for the paper. And from then on, everything, the guys helping me and handling world copy and everything, just took off. And I was there 38 more years to make it 41 in 1996.
And finally, there's a lot of people listening to this podcast who are photographers themselves, maybe amateur photographers, maybe professional photographers, people that just take photos on their smartphone. They may have a big kit. Regardless of what type of technology people are shooting on, what do you advise people on how to get the best photo possible?
Well, I really think in volume they're doing it. In the world, there's no more photographers than people with cell phones and laptops or whatever they use today with software. They are the photographers of the world. And we're starting to see a lot of pictures on the newscast that have been taken by someone with a cell phone. You've invented a multi-billion dollar photographer. That is the person that has the ability to get the shot. Not the composition, to get the shot. And that's so important in worldwide photography. And it's happening with software today.
That was my big deal feature interview with Ralph Bauer at North Van City Hall. Ralph Bauer's free photo exhibit is open weekdays from 8:30 a.m. to 5 p.m. until July 3rd at North Vancouver City Hall. North Vancouver City Hall is at 141 West 14th Street near Lonsdale in North Vancouver. Go to cnv.org for directions. Every week we end the Breaker.News podcast on a tasty note by awarding the goodness of a virtual Nanaimo bar to a deserving person or organization that has made a difference. A virtual version of the province's favorite dessert bar goes this week to Vince Gogolak and the British Columbia Freedom of Information and Privacy Association. Gogolak retired recently after 8 years as the executive director of BCFIPA. He was saluted at the organization's annual general meeting last week in Vancouver, where his successor, Sarah Newart, was introduced. Gogolak led BCFIPA at a pivotal time when stories about information and privacy rights are dominating the news at home and abroad. Thank you, Vince, and thank you, BCFIPA, for helping empower British Columbians. You can nominate someone for a virtual Nanaimo bar. Send me an email to bob@thebreaker.news. That's it for the Breaker.News podcast for June 24th, 2018. I'm Bob Mackin. Thanks for joining me. Did you know that on June 24th, 1995, in the climax of the first major sports event since apartheid ended, South Africa beat the All Blacks from New Zealand for the Rugby World Cup in Johannesburg? Nelson Mandela awarded the trophy to the Springboks. Now you know. Send me your feedback and send me your story ideas to bob@thebreaker.news. Bookmark thebreaker.news. You can also find us at thebreaker.ca. Sign up for the email newsletter and get updates to your inbox. For news as it happens, follow The Breaker News on Twitter and visit thebreaker.news on Facebook. You can support The Breaker for as little as $2 a month. For more information, go to patreon.com/thebreakernews. That's patreon.com/thebreakernews. Until next week.